is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. This is your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the Arizona Cardinals site from the USA Today NFL Wire, and my co-host with us tonight, recording on a Tuesday, is Seth Cox, from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, the Arizona Cardinals site from SB Nation, and also one of the hosts of the original Draft Breakdown podcast, which suddenly is going to become much more relevant. Like, it's relevant all year for you hardcore draft nicks, but here, you know, the offseason is here for a bunch of people. The Cardinals are still in the playoffs, but offseason content with the draft is incredible. So that's what we have on tap. So Seth's got the show going on, and we've got a playoff preview. We haven't had one of these shows since 2015. So it's been a long time, but we get a preview show. The Cardinals, coming off of a disappointing 38-30 loss to the Seattle Seahawks, they finish in second place. But they could have won the division because the 49ers did their job. And among the things we're going to talk about in this edition of the show, which is episode 341, can you believe it, 341 shows, how disappointing was it to lose and not win the division? We'll talk about what went wrong in that game against Seattle, the potential of a return from J.J. Watt and DeAndre Hopkins, the interest in some of the guys within the Cardinals organization with the coaching and general manager vacancies, and then look ahead to the LA Rams, whom they play on Monday night next week in the last game of Wild Card Weekend. So, Seth, let's start with the sadness. Just how disappointing was it? Let's go from the perspective on they had the division. So the Cardinals had the chance to win the division if the 49ers beat the Rams and the Cardinals beat the Seahawks, which you predicted would happen, I thought was a good chance of. I actually, when I made my betting picks for the week, that's what I kind of predicted would happen, and we have all this happiness. But the Cardinals didn't hold up their end of the bargain. The 49ers beat the Rams after the Rams looked like they were going to run away with that game. The 49ers come back and win, and the Cardinals can't do it. Just how disappointing was it to have the division in reach, to lose it, and then to the way they lost their own game at home?
You know, it was frustrating, but kind of fitting for what we've seen. It was, you know, it was a little bit of a microcosm of the season, right? Like, get out to that absolutely fast start, and then the defense kind of comes out and falters, and you go, okay, there's a little wane in the middle, and then they show another big, you know, flash kind of in the middle right after halftime, and they go up by a touchdown, and you're like, all right, there they are. And then, you know, we get to the end of the season or the end of the game, and they just kind of fall apart and can't put it away. And it's like, oh yeah, this is the Cardinals. And all the issues showed, right? Like, you and I were talking about it off the air, and it's really hard to win football games in the NFL to begin with. It's hard to win division football games in the NFL, and it's especially hard to win division football games when you have a Hall of Fame quarterback and coach on the other side, when you have an all-pro wide receiver in DK Metcalf and a you know, premier Pro Bowl level wide receiver in Tyler Lockett. Oh, and then a guy that's running like Derrick Henry. And then the Cardinals roll out their fifth and sixth wide or cornerback to try to stop these guys. And it showed. I mean, at the end of the day, the warts of the Cardinals shone more than the warts of the Seahawks. And that's just because at this point in time, you look at it without Robert Alford, without Marco Wilson, without J.J. Watt, that defense isn't talented enough to stop that Seahawks offense. And you might be able to sustain a loss, right? Like we saw that in the first game. But, I mean, think about how well Marco Wilson and Robert Alford played in that game in Seattle and how big they were in that game. And now think about how badly Breon Borders and Antonio Hamilton played in this game. And Hamilton didn't even play that bad, but the drop-off in this game. And the loss is not surprising. It's disappointing because they had things go right for them, right? Like, they had the chance to make up space, which we were hoping for. But just at the end of the day, this team wasn't healthy enough at this juncture to make a difference. And that's what you kind of look at and hope for heading into this, into the playoffs that we'll talk about later, is that they're just healthy enough to not just play a competitive game, but win a game. Because, I mean, I think that's the biggest thing in this kind of quote unquote losing streak. Outside of Carolina and Detroit, they've been in every game.
Yeah. They, you know, the game against Green Bay, they should have won. You know, the Carolina game, that went off the rails. The Lions game went off the rails. But the loss to Seattle, they were right there. The loss to the Rams, they were right there. The loss to the Colts shouldn't have been a loss because of the kicks. They should have beaten that. They should have won that game. They had lost by six, but missed 6 points, 7 points in kicks. They're just coming up short. And I know what that says narratively. You can't avoid that narrative, especially when you fall apart late. But the fact of the matter is, they're not the same team they were at 7-0 because they don't have the same personnel. And we're nearing that panic territory of, are we ever going to get over this? When the truth of the matter, and you were talking about this season, even if they end up losing this playoff game, it's not a failed season. The fact that they improved again, won 11 games, let's be honest, expectations entering the season was optimistically double-digit wins and a playoff berth as a wild card, which they did. It's just how they did it that we don't like. But I will say this, it was crushingly disappointing in terms, you know, this loss doesn't feel as bad if the Rams win that game over the 49ers.
Definitely. And you look at it and, you know, you say winning the division was always, I shouldn't say always, the goal was to make the playoffs. And then that changed as the season went along and winning the division became the goal because of how far up they were in the division. So then to have that chance and fail, you know, it sucked. But let's be honest, I don't know if they necessarily are in a bad spot having to play LA, who's struggling in their own right now, as opposed to San Francisco, who was kind of hot at the end of the season.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. It's disappointing. I don't think it's a failure, even if they don't, like, we wanted them to make the playoffs and win a playoff game, and I think that would have been the appropriate progress, but if they don't end up winning, I don't think it's a failure. I do think it's and we talked about this before the show, I consider it a wasted year based on how things start. They had the injuries happen. It's like 2014 when things look so great, then you lose Carson Palmer, you lose Drew Stanton, and then you lose the rest. And then it becomes Ryan Lindley starting in a playoff game and setting an NFL record for the fewest yards in a game. And that's kind of what happened. So I am very disappointed. It's big picture. It's disappointing because they had the division lead for three quarters of the year and they lost it down the stretch. It was disappointing because the scenario they needed to happen to win the division happened they couldn't take advantage of it, so it's disappointing. But the season is it a disappointment? But I would say their loss was disappointing, and losing when they could have, when just beating this Seahawks team. Why is that rivalry so weird? It makes no sense. It makes that the rivalry between these two teams makes no sense. The Cardinals have won exactly two games at State Farm Stadium against the Seahawks since 2012. Two of them. That was last year. That was 2012 in Russell Wilson's first NFL start. And the Cardinals almost lost that game. I was there. I remember it.
I was actually there too.
So. They almost lost that one too. Yeah. It's just absurd. And especially with a team like Seattle, you know, I think they're the perfect example of a team like that, because look at how, you know, they won. They ended up with the 7 wins, but they went 3 games without Russ, and they had other injuries, and he came back and he was 100%. So you've got another quality team that ended up with a disappointing season because the injuries derailed it. And that is, you point to that Seattle team, if they're the way they were playing the last couple of weeks, had they been playing that in the middle of the season with Russell Wilson healthy, you know, we might be looking at an entire NFC West of playoff teams, potentially. And it just doesn't make any sense that, you know, to that Seattle team was playing this game like it was a Super Bowl. Russell Wilson probably is ready. He hates losing. He wants to win. And he, you know, you're staring at the face of being your last game with the only team you've ever played for. So, you know, it's rough. It's rough. It's just. In a season that we've had towards the second half of the season, we've had disappointment after disappointment after disappointment. It just adds another one. When in the big picture of the season, it's not a disappointment, right?
No, it's not. There's disappointing aspects to the season in general, but it's not a disappointment. And I think that's the hard part to like reconcile.
And maybe it's the fact that we as a fan base feel entitled to some success because we have a franchise quarterback. Sometimes like we feel entitled to a Super Bowl championship when that's something that's really damn hard to do.
Yeah, and I mean, you look at it, you know, it's there are some crazy aspects to a lot of situations, and you look at it, you know, Matt Ryan is probably going to the Hall of Fame. He's never won a Super Bowl. I mean, we had Carson Palmer here. You know, those situations, having good, great quarterbacks doesn't matter. And I mean, that's the kind of frustrating thing. I mean, you look at it, I'm going through it right now. You know, Phillip Rivers is 6th all-time going in the Pro Bowl or Hall of Fame, never won a Super Bowl. Obviously, Dan Marino, Matt Ryan. So, I mean, in the top 10, you've got Matt Ryan, Dan Marino, Phillip Rivers, all of those guys. Like, 3 of those guys never
won. Drew Brees only made it to 1.
I mean, Aaron Rodgers has only made it to 1. I mean, it's Brett Favre, I guess he made it to 2. They lost 1, but you know, it's incredibly difficult. And then you look at the next set. You know, you got Matthew Stafford. We all know his story. Warren Moon, you know, never made it. Carson Palmer's there. Drew Bledsoe. I guess they made 1 and lost. And then he, of course, was the backup when they won 1.
He won 1, though. Yeah. It simply is. We have – it's the Tom Brady era of the NFL has made it and maybe just everyone else's expectations. And when you see a young quarterback take the team to a Super Bowl, you're like, that's it. This is we're going to do it. And it's just so dang hard. And the truth is we got sucked into it. And we should. That's – football's fun. Football – being a football fan is fun. So if you can't get excited when your team starts 7-0, you can't get excited when you got DeAndre Hopkins and Kyler Murray and J.J. Watt and you're like, this has a potential to be a Super Bowl team. We said that before the year. They've got the potential to be a Super Bowl team if everything goes right. And everything did go right early on. It's just all that stuff that went right early on, that it all compounded at the end.
Yeah, and that's what people don't get. It's like, there are obviously times and ebbs and flows through seasons, and it's just the Cardinals were flat out unlucky when they hit their injury riddled streak. Like we said, the straw that broke the camel's back was just the cornerbacks, right? Like, all of a sudden you're really bad in the secondary. We already know that even with a healthy JJ Watt, you were suspect at best in the front. And then you end up, you know, having to go with a not a great front 4 or 5. And then you have, I mean, I hate saying this because they're just doing their best, but I mean, you have terrible corners. And
in like fairness, these are cornerbacks that should never see playing time on defense. No,
they should be special teams guys. They should be guys, you know, depth guys. But that's why I said, like, literally the Cardinals were down to their fifth and sixth corner because their fourth corner, Kevin Peterson, got hurt on the first series of the game. I think it happened, the second series of the game, right?
Yeah. The run defense kind of failed, and Rashad Penny just blew up Kevin Peterson when he made the tackle. And you know, that's the one thing about Kevin, he is not a large man. He's a...
No, and I mean, you guys have heard us talk about him, especially me, talk about his coverage ability. And the reality always was that was never the concern, right? The concern for him was always going to be about his ability to be physical enough to play in the NFL. And quite frankly, he's failed that. And so you get the reality that he is a good enough cover guy, but when it comes to any physical aspect of the game, including certain coverages, it's not for him. And I thought he did better this year, but you know, it still bit him in the butt at the end of the season. And that's just so unfortunate for him.
Yeah,
and it's just unfortunate for this team because, I mean, it's crazy to say this, but they may win with Kevin Peterson out there. I mean, they may be good enough to beat Seattle with Kevin Peterson. But, like, when you get to Breon
Borders... But the second he comes out there, he blows a coverage and then you score a touchdown.
Right. And that's what people don't get. It's like, Borders literally was on his first series and he blew his coverage. And so, yeah, it's just unfortunate. And, man, it's hard to win in the NFL. I mean, we talk about it all the time. It's really hard to win in the NFL because so much has to go your way. And we know now that, you know, and it was a concern all along. I mean, you and I both talked about it from the beginning. Bringing in J.J. Watt was always a concern. Relying again on Robert Alford, who had had a great season, was always a concern. You know, we were concerned about AJ Green. It's been more on the field concerns than injuries, which is, I guess, surprising, but also frustrating in a different way, because we were always of the opinion that if he was on the field, he'd be fine. But I'll tell you this, and you know, you and I, we talk about things. We talk about things quite a bit on this show that we either hear or it's something that we wouldn't, you know, we wouldn't stake our reputations to. so to speak, you know, kind of words that are whispered that we'll hear. And one of those things were just the different, or the, how, I get, I'm trying to look for the right word in here, but how much Joe Burrow and AJ Green were not on the same page. And I guess at this point, should we be surprised that even if it's week 17, that Kyler and AJ still don't look like they're on the same page all the time?
It, you know, what shouldn't be surprising, but yeah, it's, yeah, it sounds like we're venting, but we understand. We get the disappointment. We get the disappointment everyone has because the Cardinals had it. They had it, and it slipped away. And then when they had a last-ditch effort to grab it again, they again let it slip away. So kind of next on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's talk about specifically what went wrong. What went wrong in that game against the Seahawks in a 38-30 loss. That's coming up next on Rise Up C-Red. We're back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. And, well, this what we're going to talk about next is what exactly went wrong against the Seahawks in that game. Hold on just a second. I need to... What is it? There we go. You still working? There we go. Hopefully that recorded that segment. Didn't freeze completely, but... Back on the Rise of C-Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. And we move on to talk about what happened against the Seahawks. And there were a lot of things. That was such a weird game to me. Because, and I said this after the game to Dan Bickley in the press room after the game. Did it feel that the defense both played great and awful all at the same time?
Well, like I said, it was kind of microcosm of their season. I mean, you had big plays made, but you also had long, sustained, game-draining drives allowed that really kind of determined this game. I mean, you look at it overall, you know, the balance of the Seattle offense in this game was insane. They had 229 yards passing, 202 yards rushing. The offense was not good. I don't want people to mistake that the offense was good. The offense was, in fact, what, you know, when you look at expected points, it was their third worst performance of the season.
Oh, and what killed them in that game is the fact, and, you know, credit Seattle, because this has kind of been their MO this year. They give up yards and don't give up points. The Cardinals had two 14-play drives and a 19-play drive, none of which ended in touchdowns. That's absurd. That's absurd. That's unheard of. But that's what the Seattle defense can do. That's part of what that is.
Right, but you look at it and you say, okay, so that was obviously not a great offensive game. This was the second worst defensive game they've had all season.
Yeah.
And so to your point, that's the really hard portion of it, is because you force two really kind of game, what you expect to be game-changing turnovers, and then you don't, and you capitalize on, I mean, getting 14 points off of turnovers and losing a game is really difficult. But when your defense cannot consistently stop the run, that's what, and like you said, those two drives where they had, what, 37 plays or whatever, and got 6 points, is just, it's tough, man. Five sacks is tough. DJ Humphries struggled in this game. I mean, there's no two ways about it. He just didn't play well. I thought you saw some of Kyler, and I don't know, maybe I'm reading this wrong, it almost seems like he was trying too hard to stay and work in the pocket.
Yes, because, you know, all year long, he's been quick to get out of the pocket to find plays. And there were times like he was just there, boom. Then sacked. It just didn't make any sense. So for me, it was once again.
Will, thanks for your time. We'll let you head back to your locker room.
And then for me, it ended up being the mistakes. So offensively, they played poorly, but it would have been a much better performance. But they kept having big plays called back. They had the AJ, you know, the AJ Green, the original AJ Green one, where it got broken up from my spot in the press box. It looked like that was just a drop, but apparently he got his hand on it. Then you had the AJ Green offensive pass interference. You had a holding call on another one. DJ Humphrey's holding call, wiping out a first down off a run on Kyler. It's just they keep messing up. They keep making mistakes, and it's not someone stopping them. They keep stopping themselves offensively.
Well, and you had the phantom illegal procedure or illegal motion call. You had the phantom PI, offensive PI. You know, it's just, and like you said, you know, somebody said to me during the game, they're like, this offense needs to make plays. I'm like, dude, they've had 35 plus yard plays called back. Three. Like, that's 100 yards of offense they had called back on just three plays.
Well, then the other thing is that after halftime, they get it turned around. They get the lead. They get a stop.
And then that three and out.
And then the three and out was compounded by the fumbled punt. And you're just like, dear goodness. Well, if they go down and score on that game is over.
Well, and that was my, you know, I wanted to bring this up on the air because after the punt, a couple people that I think are smart, you know, fans, you know, made comments about this is what worries them about Cliff. And I mean, we're talking, what was that? Middle of the third, late third quarter. Yeah, it was late third quarter. They go through that. They have that three and out. And on that one, you had, yeah, James Conner. Or that's right. That was the one where Conner went for 9 yards. Then they went to the right end, or they went to the right side again and
got stuffed.
Yeah, Garcia and Jones got blown up because I think.
Those were the three plays where Beecham was out.
Right. And then they went, and then AJ Green and Kyler had miscommunication. And then you punt, then the next, and then that series, you get 9 yards from Wilson to Metcalf, 7 yards, Penny, 2 yards, excuse me, 2 yards. From Wilson to Metcalf, then 29 yards from Penny. And then they get an easy, you know, 25 yard completion on, again, a blown coverage by your sixth cornerback. And then you come out and you go three and out, you know, you get a sack by Puna Ford, then you get the 8 yard run, and then you get another sack by Kerry Hyder, and then the Andy Lee punt. And people go, you know, they're like, this is the problem with Cliff teams, that they're not disciplined, that these things happen. And I'm looking at it and I go, all right, so maybe the pass call to AJ Green was a bad call. We don't even know. Maybe Kyler made an adjustment at the line, right? Like maybe he saw single coverage on AJ and he wanted the back shoulder and AJ ran the go, whatever. Defensively, you got burned because your sixth corner missed a call. And then your franchise left tackle got beat so bad on two plays in a row, or two out of three plays, that then your almost 20-year veteran punter messed up. And people are like, this is the problem with Cliff's teams. What does Cliff have to do with that stuff? Like, at some point, and this is what gets me. I've said this before, man. Like, if you give me a clear vision and upgrade of Cliff, I'm on board. But until you can lay out what that vision and upgrade is, like, you're just spitting in the wind. Like, I don't care. I'm not going to listen to you because Cliff's teams are undisciplined. You want to go look at a disciplined team? The Miami Dolphins, who just fired their disciplinarian head coach because players and other coaches don't want to play with him. Look at Carolina with Matt Rhule. Players and other coaches don't want to work with him because he's that big of a disciplinarian and he's that big of a guy that it's my way or the highway. Does Cliff have his warts? Absolutely. Do I think he's the answer to this team? I have no idea, man. Like, honestly, I still have no idea if this team can win with, you know, win a Super Bowl with Cliff. I know they're good enough to win, to be in playoff contention 2 out of 3 years he's been the coach and make the playoffs once. I mean, I know that for a fact. I know they're a good enough team to have a consistently top 10 offense in the NFL. I mean, we know that for a fact in 2 of the 3 seasons he's coached, right? But at some point, don't we have to get upset with the players? Like I said, the Jeff Swaim touchdown, or Freddie Swaim, excuse me, touchdown, I mean, like, I have a hard time getting mad at that. Like, that's your 6th cornerback. This dude shouldn't even be on a roster, let alone playing against DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. So, yeah, he's going to cover DK Metcalf when DK Metcalf runs an in and another guy runs a go route because he's a cornerback 6 and he's terrified of letting DK Metcalf beat him. Like, he made a mistake. These things happen, man. Like, when you're talking about a guy that's been with the team for a week or 2 weeks, that's practiced for a week on the active roster.
Makes complete sense, all of this. It just, what went wrong? A lot of things did. They didn't have their best talent out there. They didn't have, you know, and then they weren't able to close out the game with James Conner because he got hurt when he picked up a 3rd and 19 first down. And then he injures his ribs, and then you have to lean on Eno Benjamin, which, and to his credit, Eno played well down the stretch, but it made it so that they had to take too much time. And then, on top of that, then you have to recover an onside kick, and onside kicks are
iffy at best.
And, well, I think, didn't they recover one earlier this year? And which means, hey, they weren't going to do it again. Statistically, right. That just doesn't happen.
Right. And, I mean, you look at it, A.J. Green only finished with 23 yards. He had 70 yards wiped out on penalties. Christian Kirk only had 43 yards on 2 receptions. He's got to find a way to work to get open more consistently. I mean, Zach Ertz had a great game. James Conner had a phenomenal game. He had 93 yards from scrimmage and 2 touchdowns. But at the end of the day, there's one stat you can look at, and I know it really irritates people, but when you give up 190 rushing yards to Rashad Penny and you only have 240 passing yards, that's and net passing yards, you had 187.
Ugh.
I mean, you had less net passing yards than Rashad Penny had rushing yards. So it makes it really difficult to win that game. And that's, you know, you can't give up 5 touchdowns. I mean, at the end of the day, we can say everything else we want. The defense created 2 short field, or scored a touchdown, created 1 short field chance. The offense turned that into points. So you give 14 points to the defense. Yes, you would hope that this Cardinals team could score more than 30. But for the first time this year, they scored 30 points and lost a game. And, I mean, at the end of the day, man.
You should win games when you score 30 points. There's no excuse.
Right. Like, you cannot. I mean, this is the most points this team gave up all season.
Yep.
Yes, and so, and I think the disappointing thing is, you know, and we can end this topic with this. The disappointing thing is literally the week before you went out and shut down a just as talented, if not more talented offense than the Dallas Cowboys, the number one scoring offense in the NFL. By the way, they in the two games against not Arizona, 107 points. 107 points in those two games. So, I mean, I don't know, man. Like, this is where I struggle is, like, I'm not a huge Vance guy. People know that. Like, I don't think Vance Joseph is a great coach or play caller coordinator. But, man, I'm not gonna rail on a guy that's going with his cornerback 5 and 6. I have a hard time with that.
There's nobody doing that. There's nobody's going to be successful at that. But anyway, coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's move on and talk some more. But about the potential return of a couple of players, what impact could they have, and can they actually come back? That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. And we've got playoffs coming. We've got some players coming back from injury potentially. J.J. Watt has been designated to return from injured reserve. The report is that they hope that he is on the field and gets practice reps so that he can, in fact, play against the Rams. One, do you think that it's going to happen? Two, how much impact do you think he actually has on the field in his first game back in the playoffs?
You know, it's J.J. Watt, so I'm never going to discount him. He's literally one of the greatest players in NFL history. And so I think that, to me, answers both questions. One, I'm not going to – I if he says he's going to be ready, he's going to be ready. And two, if he's on the field – whether it's 10 snaps or 100 snaps, this dude's a difference maker. And he's a difference maker in ways that, as cheesy as it sounds, aren't calculable just on paper. So obviously the more he plays, the more impact he's going to have because that allows other guys to likely get free and make plays. You know, that being said, if he's out there at all, I think it's going to raise the level of play of everybody.
And it'll definitely be a shot in the arm, to say the least. I don't know how much he will do statistically. I don't know how close he's going to be to 100% either. That's the thing I wonder. It's like he's going to play. But that's not to say anything because, like, still you get 60% in J.J. Watt is probably better than
every player on defense. Yeah, the defensive
like,
line.
I mean, a healthy Zach Allen you're getting that from. But it'll be interesting to see. But he's not the only player who could be coming back. So Marco Wilson, if you saw on Twitter, he had the resurrected wrestler tweet where he basically say, "I'm coming back." Cliff Kingsbury thinks and hopes that Wilson/Peterson or Bashaud Breeland, whom they signed to the practice squad last week, will be up and available for this game. So that'll be a big boost to the secondary. We don't know what Robert Alford's status is. He looks like he's going to miss at least another week or two. Jordan Phillips, we'll see what happens with him. But the interesting one, especially since we actually saw him, was DeAndre Hopkins. John Gambadoro didn't shoot it down, didn't say it was likely, but also didn't rule out the possibility of DeAndre Hopkins coming back this week. I'm going to call cap on this one a little bit. I don't know why he said that because, well, one, He was at the game. He was obviously, and it was on, you saw the TV, there was, he was obviously using those crutches and was not, he was limpy. So unless this is the biggest game of possum I've ever seen, and plus there's all the procedural thing that says he isn't even designated to return. He hasn't even able to been able to practice yet. Adam Schefter said at best, we're talking NFC Championship game, and that's still 2.5 weeks away. Heck, almost 3 weeks away. So I don't think Hopkins, there's any chance at all. There is almost zero chance of that in my mind. Watt, I imagine, will play. Marco Wilson, I imagine, will play. What odds do you give that both Chase Edmonds and James Conner will be able to play this week?
You know, I think they're both going to play. I think that Edmonds probably could have played this week if it was the playoffs. And so since we're now in the playoffs, they're going to ask guys to gut it out. Like if there's an actual injury, like you're talking about with DeAndre Hopkins, then that's one thing. But when you're talking about
having a hurt rib,
being beat up, everybody's beat up this time of year, man, it sucks. Like it is what it is. And that's not to question anybody or say anything. That's just the reality of the NFL at this point.
But yeah, so enough with that. Time on the Rise Up Sea Red Podcast, Mr. Ricardo's talk on the web. There are some coaching vacancies and GM vacancies around the league, and the Cardinals are drawing some interest. What do we think of these interviews? Do we want to see him go? Do we not want to see him go? That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. It was Black Monday around the league, but it didn't affect the Cardinals as they're preparing for the postseason game, the wild card game this next weekend. However, the Cardinals do have some candidates within the organization. Vance Joseph has been requested to get an interview by the Miami Dolphins. The New York Giants have requested an interview both Adrian Wilson and Quentin Harris, both vice president, Adrian Wilson, the VP of pro personnel, and then Quentin Harris, basically Steve Keim's right-hand man, as the VP of player personnel. And they're going to have interviews with the Giants for their vacant GM position as Dave Gettleman retired. Going to be interesting to see what happens. So first of all, are you surprised at all at this? And two, what likelihood do you give either of these three candidates a shot of getting the job that they're interviewing for?
You know, I think that Adrian Wilson will end up getting hired somewhere this year. And then I think that there's a chance Vance Joseph gets another shot this year. That being said, in the end, I think we're going to end up with Wilson gone, Harris still here, and Vance Joseph still here.
I think that's a possibility. Low-key, though, interesting, and I know that Adrian Wilson showed up on the NFL's list of vetted top candidates. I was very surprised to see that Quentin Harris wasn't on that list, because Quentin Harris has been doing it for longer in the Cardinals as a organization as Adrian Wilson. And Harris is a little more like Keim's number two. Like, he does player negotiate, contract negotiations. He helps with scouting. And A-Dub as well does his share of things. But his side is just a little different, though he does come with the name, and he has kind of risen through the ranks rather quickly within the Cardinals organization. Vance Joseph, be interesting to see what happens with him. And I'm not sure, obviously for the man himself, I would love to see him get another head coaching opportunity. I like rooting for people in this business. There's a lot of really good people in the NFL really trying to make a difference, trying to stay on in the league and take care of their families. But I don't know if I want to have to replace Vance Joseph. Honestly, there's Vic Fangio available. I think one of the good best things that the Cardinals have going for them when it comes to the defense is their continuity. And losing him would mean starting over with a new defensive system, whether it's better, whether it's worse, with that entire defense having to learn it.
Well, that, and I was going to say, I don't know if they have the guys that fit like a Vic Fangio defense. So, you know, to your point, like, are you gonna start over? I don't see it. I mean, obviously, if Vance got hired, I would assume Fangio would be on the short list. You know, you look at other names. They're not going to be able to pry away a Dennis Allen or a Dan Quinn. So then you go down the list of other guys getting let go, right? So who else was fired this year? I mean, that's where you end up, right? Like,
yeah.
Let's be honest. Nobody's going to be excited if they hire Gerard Mayo, the linebacker coach from the Patriots, right, to be the defensive coordinator. People will probably be upset with that. So, I mean, can you hire a Mike Zimmer?
Yeah, no, jeez. Well, and the Cardinals kind of painted them into a corner a few years ago when they sort of established that they want a 3-4 defense, right?
Right.
If that's still something that Michael Bidwill is expecting to see, that Steve Keim is expecting to see, that also limits the type of scheme that you're going to do. Now, you know, if there's one name out there that would be fun, that would be Wade Phillips.
Right. And bring back Phillip, or bring Phillips back from retirement.
Especially since Vance Joseph runs a Wade Phillips defense. He's a Wade Phillips disciple in terms of in scheme and design.
I'm trying to look. I mean, I know people are going to like Brian Flores. I mean, is that really an upgrade? And that's the other thing is, I mean, it's different if he leaves, but, you know, so you've got Fangio, maybe Flores if he doesn't get another job. I just don't see.
And the move might be made internally. It could be a Brenton Buckner. It could be a Billy Davis. And then you replace the position coaches.
Yeah, and maybe that makes sense with all of the attention Brenton Buckner's been getting, that Brenton Buckner's been getting from colleges, Clemson and now Auburn, right? Like, maybe it is Buckner. He's a guy. Now, be kind of funny because, man, you'd have two real big time players coaches, right? In terms of Cliff and Brenton, because Brenton's still one of the boys. I mean, that's the thing is like, I guess it's a good thing to have if you're talking about needing to replace, you know, front office executives and defensive coordinators and things like that. So, you know, but you look at it, I would say you nailed it with Wade Phillips. I'm looking through these names. Gerard Mayo would be really the only one that would super, super interest me. But I don't know if they'd even be, like, willing to let him kind of come do the whole interview thing because he's the linebacker coach in New England. So technically that's a lateral move, right, to the NFL still.
I mean, teams can
block. They can block those.
They can block those type of interviews. Absolutely. Although there would be one thing that would be beneficial to the Cardinals. If you guys like stacking draft picks, what that would do if Vance Joseph or Quentin Harris or Adrian Wilson got hired for head coaching or front office position, that would benefit the Cardinals, each one of them, a third-round pick this year and next year, I believe. So
I think the way it works is if two get hired, you get three.
Yeah.
if three get hired, I'd imagine you just get three as well. I don't think. I mean, that would be kind of unheard of. Is the hard part too.
But I mean, if you like third round draft picks,
yeah, and they're going to be,
they're compensatory picks. They're compensatory picks.
I believe they're also after.
This is like a Chad Williams pick.
Yeah, Mason Cole.
Mason Cole.
But I believe they're also after the initial third round compensatory picks too. Correct?
Could be.
Yeah. Like the ones that for the players. So yeah, I mean, it's going to be tough. I mean, that's at the end of the day, it's always difficult to replace guys, and especially when you talk about guys that have, I know people won't like this, but guys that have grown together, this 3 years has been, you know, the right trajectory. Now, whether or not you see them being the guys to see the job through, that's a different conversation. But you can't deny the trajectory is the right way.
Yeah. I mean, that's what you want to see. It would make for an and that's what happens with good coaching staffs. Let's be honest. If Cliff Kingsbury is doing his job well, then there's going to be coaches from his staff that get hired elsewhere. That is how that goes. That the Cliff Kingsbury connection kind of leads to hirings. It's the Sean McVay effect, the Shanahan effect, that sort of thing is kind of how that goes in the NFL, because they are kind of looking for that. And yeah. Coming next on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk of the web. Let's talk in the final segment. Let's look ahead to their playoff matchup against the Los Angeles Rams. What's it going to take for them to knock off the division winners and to beat the Rams for the second time at SoFi Stadium and to move on to the divisional round? What's that going to take? That's coming next on Rise of Sea Red. We're back on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web, and the Cardinals have a playoff game. This is what we've been waiting for. We can jokingly say how getting the wild card is actually a benefit, considering the way they played at home this year. Jokes aside, they went into SoFi Stadium and beat the pants off the Rams earlier this season when both teams were healthy. What's it going to take to do it a second time?
You know, it's going to take a lot. First off, it's going to be a complete team effort. They're going to have to do everything they can to stop Aaron Donald. I mean, that's really where it starts and stops for the Cardinals to have a chance, because Aaron Donald had a sack to start the last game and to end the last game against the Cardinals. They have to be able to slow him down. And I know it's crazy, but one of the best ways to slow him down is running the football. Because as great as he is, his biggest perceived weakness is his ability in the run game. And that's like him being a 9 instead of a 10.
Right. You know? And it's more about, like, he can still make plays in the backfield, but if you run it at him, if you look at the past couple of years, teams have had success running the ball at him because it doesn't allow him to
penetrate.
It doesn't allow him to penetrate. Yeah. So then he's got to make a play at the line. And, you know, if you're keeping him at the line of scrimmage instead of winning behind it, you've done your job, essentially.
Right. And so that's the first thing. The second thing is they're going to need to get pressure on Matthew Stafford. He has been, I mean, and this is coming from a non-biased opinion, Sigmund Bloom on Twitter. I think it's Sig Bloom is his @, if you're interested. But just type in, just search Sigmund Bloom. But he was answering questions today why he's, you know, leaning towards the Cardinals. And he flat out said that even in this downstretch, Kyler Murray is playing better than Matt Stafford. And so when you look at it, when you look at it from that perspective, you're saying to yourself, okay, well, we got to keep Matthew Stafford playing poorly. He had two interceptions against the 49ers. When you get pressure on him, he's a completely different guy. And so you've got to get the pressure on him. The third thing is going to be, and I know this sounds simple, but for this team, it's imperative. It's play from ahead. Don't let Sony Michel, Cam Akers, those guys do damage. As Darrell Henderson playing, I'm quite frankly, I haven't even really looked. But
I don't know. But the fact that Cam Akers back is just like, oh my gosh,
is slightly troublesome. Yeah. So I mean, and that's the point. Like, don't let these guys be the ones that beat you. You know where your weakness is. Avoid having your weakness exploited. I think those are the keys, man. I mean, it's pretty simple. There's more complex stuff, right? But like in the end, it's going to be control Aaron Donald as much as possible. He's going to be disruptive, but if he's disruptive in the run game and not in the pass game, that's a massive difference, right? It's going to be, you got to get pressure on Stafford. You have to be able to move him off his spot and cause him to make throws that end up getting turned over. And it's something that he does quite frequently. And then third, it's just control the game, control the flow of the game, dictate the flow of the game. If you do those things, you got a really good shot to be playing in probably Green Bay the next week.
Yeah, yeah. Now I think it'll be absolutely critical as well. They've got to get a guy or two up at cornerback that weren't playing, because Cooper Kupp is just having a fantastic year, incredible year. But yes,
what do you think of the? I think it's Belichick strategy, but I could be wrong, so don't completely quote me on this. But what do you think of the Belichick strategy of taking away everything else but Kupp?
It seems like they would probably beat you. Honestly, I don't know.
So what that means is what we've seen, and I'm pretty sure it's Belichick, but I could definitely be wrong. But what we've seen Belichick do in the past is basically double team Kupp with your, let's say, Marco Wilson. I guess he'll probably be your true number one this week because of the just positional type of situations. But you put Marco Wilson on him and then a safety over the top, and then you put Byron Murphy, who's your, you know, true kind of alpha corner, you put Murph on the guy and basically say, lock him down. Like, he's the guy you've got to stop. I mean, it's a different way to look at it as opposed to putting Murphy on or your best one on the guy. So it's just, stopping Cooper Kupp's been impossible this year. He almost had 2,000 receiving yards. He had a historic season. I think you're at the point where you've got to make somebody, you know, you've got to limit everybody else, because this is just that type of season where you know he's going to get his. So what are you doing to control everybody else?
Well, offensively, they can't be bad. That they're off it. They can't make mistakes offensively because they have to.
If they play like they did against Seattle, but they turn those field goals into touchdowns, you have to feel really good about their chances.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. Like, absolutely, because it comes down to this. The Cardinals play so much better from ahead. If they play with the lead, they play better, because and that's the thing. If they allow the Rams to run the ball, which means Matthew Stafford's going to have time and he's not going to get skittish. If you force him into a passing game and you get some pressure on him, we've seen it now. He played a perfect game in Arizona the last time when they came to town for Monday night. His play was perfect. When he was erratic in LA, but we've seen both ends. So Matthew Stafford can give you an all pro day. Like you're like, you're a Super Bowl quarterback. And then you're like, oh, you're a good quarterback who isn't ready for the moment because you hear footsteps. And that's kind of what it's got to be. Now the question is that going to happen? That's what's really hard, because it's so weird how the Cardinals seem to come out better on the road for whatever reason. They avoid turnovers more. They build the lead.
Focus. That's what we've talked about before. They make more
plays early, is what it is. They make more plays early, which then makes them look like they're energized because they're making plays.
Right. And so, you know, if they come out and they get ahead, like we said, they can control things. I think that they'll be in a good position if they allow Los Angeles to be multiple and to dictate the pace of the game, running and throwing. It's going to be tough. I don't foresee this, you know, as a game that is impossible for them to win. It's going to be a tough game, though. I mean, and it's nobody else's fault but their own, right? Like,
nope.
They had chances, including the last game, and were unable to get them, you know, to take advantage of them. So we'll see what happens.
I don't know if I want to make any predictions. I don't feel. Not with knowing who's going to be up and who's not going to be up for either team. I can't, but I think this is going to be a good game. I think this is going to be, I don't think the Cardinals are going to crap the bed. I think this is going to be very entertaining on both ends, and it'll probably come down to the last 2 minutes. Even like the Cardinals game that they lost, when they lost the Rams on Monday Night Football, 30-23, I think it'll be that sort of game. I just hope that it's not the Cardinals scrambling to score two scores in the last 5 minutes. That's what got them. I want it to be a one score game, unless the Cardinals can blow them out. But like, I want it to come down to where one of the teams is either going to win it, or basically that. So either somebody's offense makes a play to win the game, or somebody's defense makes a play to win the game. But I want that. That if the Cardinals can't blow them out, that's kind of the game I want is, and I expect to see in the playoffs.
Yeah, I would agree with that, you know, and that's what you kind of want to see.
Do we want to try and predict? Do you think the Cardinals win?
I mean, honestly, if Watt and Wilson play, I feel a lot better. Like my gut goes from a coin flip to strong lean Cardinals. If Watt and Wilson are playing,
I kind of wanted, but this is always the optimist in me. I'm really optimistic when it comes to things like that. You all know that. So let's go ahead and make a Cardinals prediction, a prediction for Cardinals win. Only this time it's the Rams who have to scramble. It's a close game, but have to scramble to get like two scores at the end of the game. So let's go with. Let's go with the Cardinals winning this one 31-24.
Yeah, and that's what I would see. It's like 31-27, 30-34, 31 type of game.
Awesome. And with that, hopefully we can talk about I don't want next week's show to be the off-season talk. I don't.
Right, exactly.
So let's keep this running. Let's keep this rolling. So we'll be back again next week. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. This is the Rise Up Seaward podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We will back again next week, and we're going to be talking about a Cardinals win going into the division round. And that let's just speak that into existence. So let's do that. Thanks for listening. As always, we'll be back again next week. Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Seaward podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up, Sea Red.
Rise up!
Rise!
Rise!